It's the Truepenny Show with your host, James Truepenny.
Hello and welcome to the Truepenny Show. My name is James Truepenny. This is my show. And a man who has probably done more Truepenny shows than anybody else aside from me, Mr. Marcus Green. How are you doing, sir?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I was. That only ever glanced my mind once, but coming from you, I'm more confident in it now. That's a compliment of the highest order, and I'm good, doing good, glad to be back. We were probably supposed to get to this a little earlier, but life intervened on the weather side for me. But y'all know we always get back to Gleek because it's always quality shows to talk about, and thankfully they always double up on us, so we always have multiple shows to talk about.
Yes, exactly. This show was, in fact, well, we're going to look at two shows today. We're going to look at the Great Strong Hearts Produce Action Dynamo show, which was on the 14th of April from Amuda Sky Building, Stella Hall, which is our favorite Glate venue. And then we went to the venerable Shinjuku Face for Glate Ledette UWF version 4. But we're going to start with the Strong Hearts show, which was there to celebrate Strong Hearts in all of its glory, one of the biggest, most influential factions in professional wrestling history, obviously founded in Dragon Gate. Sorry, I had to turn the volume up then. Founded in Dragon Gate, became a mainstay of OWE in China, and now, of course, the mainstay faction in Glate. Obviously, on the opening cards of AEW, they have been everywhere. They have done everything, and it's high time there was a show that celebrated the greatness of Strong Hearts. There were some members of Strong Hearts not on this show. They're slightly busy because the other members of Strong Hearts are the Rascals. And again, they're slightly concerned with Impact Professional Wrestling, or sorry, TNA, as we should say nowadays. There was some representation from the other factions, as you would imagine, because you can't just have a show when there's only six guys in the faction. And there was some hijinks, as you can imagine, for a party. Hayato Tomoro opened the show, though, your G-Rex champion. He went in against Go Miyake in his second ever professional wrestling match. Well, first of all, there was a big talk from the members of Strong Hearts who were on attendance. That's what opened the show. But the actual first match was Hayato Tomoro versus Go Miyake. Go got a bit of a kick in, even more than he did against Al Linderman, to be honest with you. As you'd imagine from the G-Rex champion, who wanted to make his presence felt and lead by example. What were your thoughts on this one, sir?
Yeah, honestly, this felt like a situation of David meeting Goliath and David not having his correct slingshots that day. Tomoro was not having any of it. He basically sunned him for the entire match. Took everything he had, particularly with the shots, walked through everything, and really just hosted him for a lot of the match. You know, good on Go for, you know, having that willpower to keep getting back up and trying to push through. And he had got some shots in here and there, but there was absolutely no way anybody watching this would have even remotely thought that Tomoro was going to lose. So, like you said, he had a better night against Linderman, who I guess was, you know, opt for allowing a young man to have a better case of a showing. Here, I think Tomoro did him a great service by allowing him to get up, because he really could have done worse than he did. This was just a show off for Tomoro here.
It does remind me, it's obviously going to remind me of Youngboy matches in New Japan Pro Wrestling, but it kind of reminds me more of kind of like the Joshi stuff as well of the 90s, when the young girls would go up against a Hokuto or Toyota, and they get a cuff around the ears. They didn't get things right. So this was an intriguing match to have, certainly. They've got a lot of faith, because he's had a lot of matches, and he's had two matches in two shows, which is more than some of their regular guys get. So they clearly have some faith in the young man, and we will see how things develop from here, is the best way of putting it, I think. Next up. Oh, yes, indeed. Next up was a little bit of storytelling, shall we say. On the continuing story of Keita Ishida and Tetsuya Yuzuchi. For those of you who do not know, Tetsuya Yuzuchi has recently turned heel and joined his longtime friend Keita Ishida in Black Generation International. Now, our good friend Issa, who is a photographer for Pro Wrestling Illustrated, is a massive fan of Keita Ishida and Tetsuya Yuzuchi, and a fan of pro wrestling love stories in general. And this is no more pro wrestling a love story than this. They have been partners in previous incarnations of their runs in professional wrestling. And as she put it, you can't keep them kick boys apart. And this is kind of like goes back all the way to when Ishida made the deal with 60 Seconds to fight Bulk Orchestra, loser break up, and 60 Seconds lost, which was fairly obvious because it was four against five. In an elimination tag team match, which caused Saito to turn heel and join Black Generation International. And we haven't seen Saito in a while, which would suggest he's either out of contract with Glate or is just not being used anymore. But Yuzuchi, it kind of like puts the focus on Yuzuchi, who turned heel and reunited with Ishida recently. Now, of course, on the other side of the equation is Seiichi Ikimoto, who is the person Yuzuchi turned heel on, who gets the pinfall victory in this match, tagging with Koji Uemoto in a fun little wrestling match. But this one is kind of more about the story on the Glate, on the greater Glate story, if you see what I mean. Because Uemoto has not been used too much in Glate as of late. It was nice to see him. He's really cool. You know, but this was kind of like the story of the first match with Yuzuchi and Ishida together, and kind of the story of Ikimoto and his relationship with Yuzuchi, which has gone downhill spectacularly. There was a big explanation in, I think it was ShoePro this week, or last week, between Ishida and Yuzuchi and why Ishida had recruited Yuzuchi and why Yuzuchi had moved. And to show their love for each other, you will notice that Tetsuya Yuzuchi now has matching nail polish to Keita Ishida, as well as wearing double denim in his interview, which there is no more heel than wearing a Canadian tuxedo, is there, Marcus?
Agreed. And, you know, as we very much learned from Jan's family, you got to be on brand with the attire.
What's your thoughts on this particular matchup and the debuts of Yuzuchi in Black Generation International so far?
Hey, he's doing what he needs to do to fit in, and he's bringing it. But either, you know, by himself and obviously with his longtime friend. We'll get to his solo outing on the next show. But I mean, he looked good here. Very much him and the Sheet look like, you know, gave off great chemistry. I would like to see more of Ikimoto. You know, he's got a certain way about him, I think, with Thrive, both in tag team situation like we got here and in solo, perhaps in you know, some UWF, I think he'd be great in, because, you know, with the historic venom that was coming off in this match, it very much felt like him and Ikimoto and Yuzuchi needed to kind of settle this alone, you know, and that type of situation, which I thought was really good. But yeah, Seiichi looked really good here, and obviously he capped off the win, getting that armbar. So, you know, I think this thing is it's another chapter in the book, and I think, you know, they got a lot more to write in it. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing more of Ikimoto and more of this tension between the two of them as Tetsuya looks to continue planting his stronghold in BGI.
Indeed. Issa is happy they're back together again. So that's good from her point of view. I did show this to Christy, by the way, in an effort to bring her in to the Glate. She's getting there. She's not all the way there yet. I'm working on it.
Do you think she would like the hijinks matches better? What are we about to get into?
I don't think so, because she doesn't like DDT.
Okay.
Because there's too much hijinks. She likes the story and she likes characters, but there's too much of that in DDT. So I'm not sure if this one would be too much for her, because this is hijinks. This is shenanigans of the highest, high quality shenanigans. Do not get me wrong. The people involved are fantastic. However, it is shenanigans. I think it might be a bit much. But I think the story like Ishida and Izuchi, that's kind of her bag. I think, you know, the story of like people getting back together again and you know, telling a long-term story. I think that's kind of thing. And I think that's kind of thing that kind of tricks fans in that aren't... Well, obviously, we watch it for the wrestling quality because that's kind of the thing we like. But obviously, there is... there's got to be story in wrestling matches. You know, that's what draws different people to it for different reasons. And I think that's not to say it's not been something... Glade has looked at it seriously, especially in T-Hawk's reign. I think the relationship T-Hawk had with certain wrestlers was much more story-based than in Lindemann's reign, whereas Lindemann's reign was kind of more towards, it was a marathon, I'm going to outlast everybody. Whereas T-Hawk told stories with his championship matches. And I'm intriguing to see how they go with Tamura that way. Is it going to be more like Lindemann, where he's just going to try and prove himself to be the best wrestler in the world? Or is it going to be more like T-Hawk, where he has to take individual challenges one at a time and you know, go at it that way? I'm intrigued as to how that will play out. But I think these kind of stories is what will draw a different audience to the company.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Chrissy was a love, the golden lovers then.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, yeah.
Yeah, she did. She really enjoyed those characters, but she wasn't as big a fan of the Elite, because it kind of, you, and we discussed it a lot. We actually did a 4-hour podcast with Josh from WeWorks there about, and one of the big subjects we talked about was the fact that the Elite kind of had storylines for America, which did really well, because obviously, you know, they filled the pyramid in Long Beach with 12,000 people, and they went to Dallas and they did 12,000 people there. So you had storylines for America and then storylines that were happening in Japan, and it kind of separated the product. So if, and I think this is the thing, is with Glade, obviously this is all encompassing, because we've not got that many gauge in, have we? So, you know, you don't get that much storylines for everyone, and I think that's cool. And sometimes you kind of get unhinged stuff that comes out of the brain of the people involved, which segues us nicely to what happened next, which was a tag team match between Beauty Kawakami, who had a striking resemblance to Ryuichi Kawakami. I'm wondering if she was his cousin. And Shigeko Deluxe, who again looks an awful lot like Shigehiro Iri. I'm wondering if they're related at all. And they went up against Hartley Jaco, a young lady who was quite large in stature, who had a striking Australian accent, who was tagging with a young man called Denshi Michiyotoko, who again kind of looked an awful lot like Michiko. And stuff ensued, which was a bit mad, to be honest with you, because obviously this is well off the page from my usual fare as far as Glade is concerned. I'm intrigued about this, Marcus. What did you think of this particular matchup?
Yeah, I was. it's hard to describe. I'm glad I got James to talk to this with about, because I'm like, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to get out of the entrances. Like I went back and watched them like twice per person. It was weird. But yeah, I mean, for me, it was, like you said, there's hijinks abound. It was intriguing, because I had to remind myself, I haven't seen a relative of Erie since the last time this popped up. And so I totally blanked on it. And then I'm like, okay, all right, that would make sense, because it reminded me of it. Then it just kept happening. I'm like, okay, all right. Then the match went on. I'm like, okay, this is fun. This is cool. This is cute. Obviously not my particular taste of cup of tea, but it served what it needed to serve. And I can appreciate the fact that everybody put in the effort and were committed to the thing. I will always appreciate committing to the bit. So, yeah, it was cool. It did what it needed to do. The audience obviously loved it, from entrances on to the finish of the match. And, you know, those Eries, they stack up wins.
Oh, yes. Shigehiro Eri has quietly gone about having one of the best wrestlers, best years any wrestlers have. He's had main events in GCW, in DDT, in Glate. He's had main events in North America, in Europe. I think he did Super Strong Style 16. He's been everywhere, done everything. I'm just quietly gone about having banger after banger after banger on independent cards all across the country. And he seems quite happy to do it, and he's making a decent living doing it. Doesn't really seem keen on staying in one place like the rest of Strong Hearts do. But he's doing a good job, isn't he? And, you know, this is everyone having some fun. But equally, he did a really good job in this match. This is just a fun match to enjoy. You unplug brain and watch four exceptional wrestlers play different characters that they don't normally play. I like Michiko's character. She thought it was awesome.
She's like, yeah, she was
nerd boy with his back as a foreign object, if you will. Yeah, it's just fun. Hartley Jackson as well. Hartley can do anything in pro wrestling. He used to be a WWE trainer, so I suppose he has to be able to do everything at one point or another. Currently having a pretty good run in the Championship Carnival Tournament in All Japan Pro Wrestling. He's been doing, that's their equivalent of the G1. He's been doing well in that. I keep seeing clips from him doing that. We have to do an All Japan show. We've got the All Together show coming up at next month, which we'll look at some All Japan guys going into that. But I think it would be nice if we did an All Japan show eventually, of a modern All Japan. We've done loads of old school All Japan shows. I'd like to do a modern All Japan show, but it's finding the time and someone who's willing to do it with me, because we all watch so much wrestling.
Yeah, I got to play catch up with some stateside stuff after we get off here.
This is the thing, isn't it? It's just like, as you were saying like last week, like the guys on the BFR podcast, Band from Ringside podcast, they watch everything. They watch New Japan and Stardom and AEW and WWE and TNA and Noah. And they're like, how do you get the time? When do you eat? When do you go to work? But yeah, anywho, let us move on. Next up, we had Kazuma Sakamoto and Yumitsuki Takahashi. Now, Yumitsuki Takahashi, is that new? He doesn't even have a cage match page, so I'm going to try and find out some more stuff about him. Whilst Marcus tells us what you think of this particular match.
Yeah, this is my introduction to Mr. Takahashi as well. Not my first introduction to a Takahashi, but this one in particular. Kaz Sakamoto, another one of Boku Orchestra's aces, rarely finds himself in a situation where he's the underdog, and certainly did not fit that mold here in this scenario. You know, Takahashi put up a very interesting fight, but it never really looked like Kaz was out of sorts or anything. Very much given better than what he got, and closed it out in pretty convincing fashion. I've always shown respect to his opponent, but I never felt throughout any of this as if he could possibly lose. And then Sakamoto is always the wild card anyway, so if he needs to, he can turn it up at any point in time with his tag or solo. But when it's quite interesting when he's in these solo scenarios, because, you know, like I said, the wild card kind of allows him to, you can't really get ahead of him or strategize, because you really just don't know what he's capable of. I don't even necessarily know if he's always thinking when he does stuff, which makes him an interesting character to watch. So, closed out the young man, Takahashi, in under 10 minutes. And, like I said, put up a good fight, but Sakamoto's kind of on a different tier.
Yumikatsu Takahashi is a kickboxer. He had his debut on March 28th of this year. So this must have been his second or third match. And he debuted against Masayaki Machizuki on an independent show. Machizuki's no slouch. So, you know, he was starting at the top. And it does not show that he's only been wrestling for 3 weeks in this match, does it? Who trained him? I mean, obviously you've got the mechanics of, like, you know, fighting styles and stuff, but kickboxing is a different world compared to pro wrestling. So
yeah,
this is pretty impressive, really.
Yeah, do you think he may have fared better? I don't necessarily know if that's something you want to do either, but it may fit his style better, like putting him in a UWF match instead of this?
I would have thought so, especially considering, like, you know, they were doing that big UWF show a couple of weeks later. You know, I would have thought they would have that. But then again, he maybe is trying to get his reps in as a pro wrestler and wanted to, you know, made the court request, can I have a pro wrestling match, please? Because I need the reps, which is fair enough. If you're only just starting, you need to do whatever you need to do. Intriguing. Admittedly, he did not get a lot of offense in. A lot of kicks was always these, like, his bread and butter. But, you know, for the whole complete package of taking bumps and selling and not braining yourself, which is hard to do, especially at this level, because these guys are world-class guys. You know, Sakamoto is a former NXT number one contender. You know, he's done the whole job. 20-year professional veteran, Dragon Gate and the whole nine yards. He's done the whole lot, hasn't he? Then, you know, now it kind of puts a different kind of level of respect on Sakamoto, putting his hand out to shake it, even though Takahashi did not want to show respect back and got a headbutt for his trouble, which is fair enough, I think. That was just, you know, unnecessary. but yes, any other thoughts on this match?
Just that I'm looking forward to seeing more of Takahashi. Both hopefully varied in between both more wrestling outings. I don't necessarily know if he want to keep climbing the ladder or orchestra, because it's only going to get worse. trust me. But seeing him, you know, through more wrestling matches and hopefully some UWF matches so we can see what he's capable of there as well.
Okay, then let's move on to the next match, which featured the tag team of Kumi Urashai and Quiet Storm, former number one contenders to the G Infinity Tag Team Championships, but they lost to Seki Yoshiaka of Strong Hearts and Magnitude Kishiwada, who's one of our favorite wrestlers because he's called Magnitude Kishiwada. You know, with that name, you're already on our side. You're a winner as far as we can tell. Calling yourself Magnitude. That's a proper wrestling name, that is. And this was a good small man versus big man battle. It don't get much more chunkier than them two. And there was a lot of good tag team back and forth. This was a perfectly fun match. Love watching Quiet Storm. He's just big and chunky luchador, which, you know, with power, he's cool. I just like him watching him wrestle. And I like all the guys in this match. They're all fun to watch. And this is kind of what this card was about, just entertaining professional wrestling matches. Nothing particularly serious except for Ishida and Jazuchi, but everything else, just let's have some fun. And this was a good back and forth professional wrestling match. Any thoughts on this one, Marcus?
Oh, same exactly what you said, particularly because, like you said, it was a clash of styles and turns. I mean, you got these two big, like I said, that's a, you know, Kuma Arashi and Quiet Storm, that's a lot of man on one side of the ring. Men, if you will, and then you got Magnitude and Seki, who are not as big, but you weren't going to be able to convince Magnitude of that, because he was very much the whole time going back and forth like he was the bigger guy. And if he wasn't the bigger guy in that situation, he was going to do enough moves to make himself the bigger guy. So they did what I kind of say you had to do if you're in a situation with nothing but vocal orchestra guys. You kind of have to outlast them and catch them. And that's what they did here. You know, 13 minutes, 53 seconds, like you said, just a fun outing. You know, you got guys of a certain size, guys of another size, that kind of got to, you know, change up how they do things to kind of get an advantage. And it was fun.
Yes, certainly. I think we're going to have to look at maybe Magnitude and Seiki having a crack at them there in G Infinity Tag Team Championships if things are to move on. So we'll see what happens. Now, next up, we had an intriguing singles match between Takahiro Yamamura of Strong Hearts and Issei Onatsaka of Strong Hearts. Now, we know that Issei Onatsaka is a member of Yan's family full-time, but before he was in Yan's family, he was in Strong Hearts, and he's never really left his Strong Hearts friends. He kind of just, like, is on loan, shall we say, to Yan's family, or more to the point, they kidnapped him. And a couple of shows ago, when it came to the idea of a whole Strong Hearts match, Onitsaka wanted to wrestle Yamamura in his re-debut to pro wrestling, his return to pro wrestling a couple of months ago, where instead that was spoiled by Keita Ishida, who beat Onitsuka, and therefore Yamamura faced it Ishida in his debut, whereas Onitsuka wanted to wrestle Yamamura. So they decided to have their match together that they would have had a few months ago if that meanie Keita Ishida had not got in the way. And as a result, they had a blinding professional wrestling match. You know, back in the day, from the What Reviews, I never saw Yamamura in Dragon Gate, but everything I read about him primes him to be one of the best professional wrestlers in the world. And the more I watch him, the more I start to believe it, because he does not have any ring rust for a guy who didn't wrestle for 5 years. And he's in against Onitsuka, who we've seen do everything in pro wrestling over the last few years. He's a comedy guy, he's a character guy, he's a straight-up wrestler, he can do shoot style, maybe not as much as the other guys in this company, but, you know, he's got a wide range and ability, and he's wrestling at the top of his game. He's one of the glue guys that keeps Glade together. And Yamamura is just exceptional and just hangs with him at every stretch of the imagination. And you forget that he's only really been back in the ring for 6 months after a massive layoff. And this was just so much fun to watch. Two friends having a great wrestling match. You can't really get better than this as far as guys at this level. World-class professional wrestlers having a world-class professional wrestling match. What more could you want? Marcus, your thoughts?
Oh, this was ace. This was great. This was one of the two reasons I would tell somebody to watch this card. You know, we know what he said. It can go. This is my introduction to the Takahiro. And even before you gave, you know, that backstory, which I always look forward to, because it's just a necessary added element to the match. Even after watching it, I'm sitting there like, yo, Ito, Jan's family, why y'all don't get this guy? Get this guy. Like, it, because I didn't know what to expect. And then it started out, and then as it went, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I know who I came in this match rooting for, and I don't necessarily know if I'm on that train anymore. Because, I mean, it was just that good. Like you said, it was great back and forth. To the point where you really didn't know who was going to win, because it could have went either way. And it, although it did come down to a great little thing of, I think EC had to hit a succession of spears, and kind of like basement spears, to where Takahiro was on his knees. So that was an interesting way of doing that. But yeah, this was great. They could run this back again for 20 minutes, and yeah, this was just great. Like I said, one of the two. My two favorite matches of the night, one of the two reasons I think, you know, you definitely tune into this card. And yeah, just two guys going out there showing and proving, and yet another reason why Glee is a great place to just watch simply great professional wrestling, because they deliver matches like this.
Absolutely. And it's just, I want to see Yamamura have a great run. You know, I heard so much about him. And, you know, he did a little bit of run-ins and stuff when we were watching, first of all, and he just went back to being a DJ and an office guy. But just watching him wrestle in this match, this is, like, the match against Ishida was great, but this match is just phenomenal, because it's just another level of, hey, I've got the ring rust off, I'm having a go. And this is just so cool. I've just enjoyed it so much. Can't say enough about it. It's just a wonderful, wonderful thing.
And I think he was going, like... Because I think for most of the match, he was you do stuff and be like, Onitsuka. So that was another great added element. That history there was, it made the match feel palpable. So yeah.
Now, speaking of shenanigans, there was shenanigans aplenty in the main event of this particular match. Pegaso Eliminar, who may be very similar kind of looking to someone what an RV in his body shape. Raymond Daisho, big gentleman, big lad, seems like he could throw a good suplex, maybe an avalanche one. And Doncho Illuminar, who's very, very handsome looking underneath that mask when we saw them, went up against Siriyuma, who wears big knee pads and does a meteora. I wonder who that could be. Minoru Tanaka, he's not even trying, is it really? And Shiru. Now, Shiro, who I have not seen wrestle in a very long time, funnily enough, about the same time that Kazayashi went to North America to wrestle for WCW, disappeared off the face of the earth, haven't seen him since. And now all of a sudden he's back. Intriguing. But here we are. This was a lucha match, a essentially between, again, a bunch of mates who were having a lunch match. But yes, this was fun. It was good to see Shayu again, because obviously Kaz Hayashi, 50 years old now, he's getting toward to the end of his career. He's retiring soon. And this is kind of the start of his retirement run. And he's bringing back Shiryu to have one more match. So this was kind of the exact place that he could do it. And everyone kind of bought into the fun as well. And wore masks to have a to match in their regular gear. So everybody knew who it was, basically. And of course, we had mask shenanigans in the middle of everything. Because of course, you have to have mask shenanigans. Except Shiryu, who is obviously a mask character and can't lose his mask. Because then you find out it's Kaz Hayashi. But yeah, again, this is just big, dumb fun in a proper lucha kind of match with Rudos and Technico, every Rudos and Technico thing that you're ever going to see, all the backflips and the jumps and the whole nine yards, and let's arm drag everybody and do the jump. It's the whole big, dumb lucha thing, which I have a lot of time for. It's just fun. It's big and stupid, and sometimes you need big and stupid. And it doesn't get much more big and stupid than this. So I'm quite happy with this. May not be everybody's cup of tea. I fear, Marcus, it may not be yours.
These are my notes verbatim. Lots of color. Lots of traffic. Lots of shenanigans. .. End it with a frog splash.
There you go. What more do you need? End it with a frog splash. There you go. That's it. That's the whole thing. Whole nine yards. There you go. Obviously, we had much more serious things to follow on the next card. So I think they could get away with one being a bit dumb. However, the main event of the evening would pit the two former G-Rex champions, Al Linderman and T-Hawk, against one another. And you couldn't really expect anything less from two of the guys that have carried the company. This was exceptional professional wrestling. Again, two mates having a wrestling match. What more could you ask for? The two mates happen to be the two of the best wrestlers in Japan. Arguably two of the best wrestlers in the world. In fact, I would argue Linderman's arguably possibly one of the top five junior heavyweights on planet Earth right now, in my humble opinion. But who was going to win? Well, it turned out that Linderman took this one out in 20 minutes and 8 seconds, but it was an awful lot of back and forth and great storytelling between the two of them, as you would expect from two people of this high caliber. I'm guessing this is the other match you were talking about recommending, Marcus.
Again, this was ace. Like I said earlier, to me, it was two great matches in the night. This is my second favorite after Issei and Yamamura. And this is the other match that you should watch this card for. Like James said, two former G-Rex champions, and oddly enough, for as good as Linderman is, and we've talked extensively back and forth about T-Hawk, his presentation, him winning the championship, his reign, what he went through with that reign, and what his legacy as a champion was going to be, in contrast to, you know, Linderman and Ishida. And it felt like he turned it up a gear in this match, and kind of to let Linderman know, like, this is why, like, I was the champion after you. Like, it just felt like he was coming with a different level of tenacity here, to the point where Linderman was, you know, going off with shots, and T-Hawk was just standing there walking through it like he was Hayamoto. And I'm sitting up there, like, almost to the point I was like, I wonder where this version of T-Hawk was when he was fighting Yamamoto. But then again, I sit back and say, no, again, Yamamoto, you know, Hayamori is a different cat. And maybe he did bring this version and it just didn't work. But T-Hawk was coming off like the T-9000 in this match. And kind of making Linderman have to almost elevate to his level at times. But again, being the OG G-Rex champion, battle-tested, battle-ready, no stranger to being in the midst of some deep water. And he was like, look, if my Germans ain't working, I'm gonna come up with something else. And he did. It was a Tiger German, and he closed him out. But this was just great across the board.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, this whole card wasn't really in the canon of Glade, in the sense of these are all fun matches, but obviously this has a lot of say in how the story of Lindemann and T-Hawk's going to go going forward. You know, this level of match has got to be kind of an influence of what happens next in the G-Rex Championship. And this whole card, apart from Mizuchi and Ishida, is kind of like just a fun card because that's kind of like a standalone card. But you kind of see its influence on the Glate universe and how things are going to work in the upcoming months. And you've had a couple of cards, because the next card, the UWF card, obviously characters change in UWF. They're all straight wrestlers. There's no real heels and faces. There's just wrestling. And that changes the way things maneuver themselves around in the company. But, you know, we have seen UWF matches have an effect on the way Glate has been booked and vice versa. So this match was kind of like, though it was supposedly wasn't about the story of Glate, obviously, when you've got two high-profile wrestlers like this, it becomes the story of Glate because they're the two former champions. Right then, let us move on to Shinjuku Face. We have got 228 people in attendance at this particular show. Me and Marcus are sharing screens so we can watch it because we watched it last week. And natural disasters caused us problems. And this is a big card. This has got a lot of matches on it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
It's a full plate.
6, 7. Yeah, it's a full plate, and with some of the biggest names in the industry on this particular card as well. But let us start at the beginning, and we start with the UWF crew introducing themselves, led by your favorite female shoot style wrestler, Maya Fukuda, who gave the address to the audience this year, which was nice to see because it shows the confidence that she's gained while she's been wrestling for Glate. What are your thoughts on that? Because I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was great. They look good. I always appreciate the fact that Glee kind of does these things before their shows. Kind of, it just shows a level of intentionality and overall professionalism. And to your point about Fukuda, always great to see, you know, my girl Fukuda. And obviously, she's going to do her thing a little bit later as we get off into the card. But like you said, it not only shows that her growing confidence we've seen from the very first time that we've seen her, she's been on that journey. But it also shows the company's confidence in her to have her do it. So, you know, it's great on both ends.
Absolutely. So the first match of this particular show under Glate UWF rules. It's a while since we've done this, we should go over the rules whilst we're here. Matches won by submissions or knockouts. You start with 5 points, and a point is taken away for every foul and for every rope break. That's it really. So the first to 0 points loses, the first to be knocked out loses, the first to be submitted loses. Matches are 15-minute time limits. Essentially, it's based on the old UWF rules set, but instead of 15 matches for a single and 21 for a tag team match, it kind of speeds the pace up a little bit. Okay, so these matches are not hanging around because they're pretty stiff. No one wants to stand and get hit for a very long period of time, which is fair enough because these are professional wrestlers and you need to protect your investment. I think it's reasonable. A lot of people always say, like, oh, it's not like it was in the old days. And I'm like, yeah, fair enough. But, you know, they've got to go to work next week because it's such a mixed environment. But the first match was Yutaka Kobayashi. He was making his Glate debut. Not an experienced professional wrestler, but he is a genuine hard case. Current MMA fighter. He's been fighting out of Japan. He's 38 years old. He has a record of 15 wins, 23 losses, and 4 draws. So a bit of a journeyman. And he's from Kanagawa. He was going up against our favorite Black Generation submission artist. That would be Tetsuya Izuchi. What did you think of this one, Marcus? It went to a 15-minute time limit draw. I should have mentioned the result. That would be a good idea. Because I think it was the first time we've really seen Izuchi stretched in these kind of matches.
Yeah, usually he either closes it out or gets closed out. This was great though. I thought this was a kick it off with a bang. Like this is another match that I'd point to somebody who was new to UWF and wanted to really get a good kind of gist, if you will, overall overview of how these matches go and whatnot. Two great opponents here. You know, Tetsuya, I think he's more comfortable standing up because Kobayashi definitely wanted to take him down, take out the legs, go for the submissions, which he did, which was getting to Tetsuya till he kind of was able to get him back up and stand him up, catch him a couple times. And it kind of got thick towards that end there. And I don't necessarily know if he would have closed him out because Yutaka was kind of running him on the ground. But this was just great. Like, if I had to simplify, I always say if I had to simplify, you know, the style of match to somebody who was, I guess, just solely Americanized, I call it body chess.
Yeah, that's a good way to say
it. Yeah, it's body chess. So, yeah, it was great. I thought it was a great way. And this was first time, like, I wasn't disappointed in a time limit draw. It was good stuff.
Yes, absolutely. It did go the full 15 minutes. But it was a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, it's, again, like Izuchika's evolution as a wrestler in this format, when he really didn't start with the beginning of UWF 1, he's only really been really been showing on these cards over the last year or so. He's shown an awful lot of depth in this particular run. Next up, we had a tag team match with, again, two people who generally do not wrestle in these style of matches very often, as was showed by the experience of one of them. Dark Generation International, Hartley Jackson and Katara Suzuki went up against Hideki Sakani and Tatsuyu Matsumoto. Katara Suzuki, obviously a professional wrestler by trade, well-versed in junior heavyweight, King's Road style, as a former member of the All Japan and Noah Dojos. This is not really his thing, especially when he tried getting some pinfalls, and it was like, no. Hartley Jackson, former Shoot Fighter himself, he's well-versed in this, which this is his second match in UWF. Hideki Sakani and Tatsuyu Matsumoto, well-versed mixed martial artists and professional wrestlers. We've seen both of these guys on these shows before, and it was intriguing to see this particular match between the veterans and the guys who don't really know this do this kind of thing very often. But it was a very fun match to watch from that particular point of view. Any thoughts on this one, Marcus?
Yeah, and I got forgot to say it when I was talking about the last match. This whole card, like you said, was stacked. I was vocal throughout this whole card, which I normally, that's just not normally my thing, but it was so good because, like I said, this watching these chess matches is great. And I was going back to the last match, I was very impressed with Tetsuya's quick thinking and swiftness with getting out a lot of those early takedowns early on. But coming back to this match, yeah, Hideki and Matsumoto, yeah, clearly they were more versed at a particular level. Not knocking Jackson or Couture by any means, but yeah, and you would, I mean, the guy's nickname is Shrek. But he was very much going to martial arts with it, because, and it's weird too, like he has such a presence about him. It's like, I don't want to stand up with him because look at him, but I don't know if I can get him down either. It's the weirdest thing, and I'm thinking that as a viewer, so I can only imagine. So I'm like, man, Katoro, please get Harley in here. And then he got in there, and then Shrek was getting him down with the submissions. And it got to a point where, you know, a couple points down, I'm sitting there like, I literally go, I'm like, Harley, you're a big man. Act like it. And he got in there against Matsumoto. I'm like, yo, he's thin. Start tossing him. Suplex City, bro. And he's like, and he finally started, like, because he had him. I'm like, bro, pick him up and slam him. And he did it a couple times, and they closed it out. Because I'm like, you watch these scenarios, and we're going to talk about it as we go throughout the card. Sometimes it feels like, because, I don't know, maybe it's because certain individuals are so focused on getting knocked out, they almost forget about the range of stuff they can actually do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I can definitely understand that you don't want to get took down, you don't want to get dropped off your feet. But you can't coach power. And oftentimes, when somebody as methodical as a lot of these technicians are, getting slammed, rocked, or just, you know, harsh like that, it'll completely take them off the game. So I'm glad Hartley remembered who he was. And after the match, him and Shrek clearly aren't done. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Is Shrek? Well, this is the first time we've seen Shrek since the last time we saw Shrek was at the G1 Climax last year, he was in attendance on the show and got Sheriff Lone Star, my Twitter alter ego, onto New Japan's show because Kevin Kelly didn't know who he was. And Henare and Great O'Khan went over to say hello and shake his hand and say hello. And Kevin Kelly was like, "Who's that guy? He looks terrifying." And I was like, "Hey, it's Shrek Sakani, and he wrestles for Glate." And he was like, "Oh, cool. Thank you very much." And he announced it on screen, which was nice. Mm-hmm. but yeah, it was intriguing, this match for sure. And I certainly do think we maybe get some more Hartley Jackson versus Shrek Sakani, because I think that would be an exceptionally good singles match. I'd be looking forward to that, to be honest with you. As we're watching our screen, Katoro did try and go for a pinfall.
Yeah.
The referee was like, no. Wrong rule set.
Flawlessly executed Mahi Straw.
Oh, yeah.
There like, yo, I almost wish he would have, like, almost got taken over by Zack Sabre Jr. Because I'm like, if he could have transitioned that into submission, they might have closed out the match. Like, he hit it so pretty, I'm almost mad he couldn't pin it.
If I remember correctly, Suzuki Katoro may have been in Stinger when Zack Sabre Jr. was in Stinger in Noah at the same time, I think. Possibly. So maybe, you know, there's a bit of influence there, a little bit. You know, Ogawa was a big influence on Zack Sabre Jr. He was the leader of Stinger, still is the leader of Stinger. So yeah. But anywho, let us move on. Yura Suzuki came in to have another match with Maya Fukuda, and this is the women's match. My notes. Yura Suzuki is a Just Tap Out wrestler. She's been trained by Taki Michinoku, and we've seen these two fight before. Both are incredibly young. Fukuda is 23. But unbelievably, Suzuki's 17. She does not wrestle like a 17-year-old. She does not have the stature of a 17-year-old for a start. And even when she was wrestling her at 16, she looked like a 10-year pro. It's amazing how early they start these women in just wrestling in general. She's been wrestling since she was 14 years old, Yura Suzuki.
She's 17 here?
She's 17 now. She started with Pro Wrestling Magic in 2020.
Jesus Christ.
She's a Just Tap Out regular. She's been wrestling in Ice Ribbon more than anything else, which is kind of like, yeah, she did 38 matches for Ice Ribbon last year. She's been wrestling for Sendai Girls. She's kind of got, I think, Ice Ribbon will pick her up and send her on a bit of an excursion. So she's been in Sendai Girls, and she'll have done the whole thing. She'll have got a wide range of matches with an awful lot of very big, heavy hitters. Sendai Girls now available on Wrestle Universe, by the way, where you can find Noah and DDT and TJPW and loads of other wrestling, because Wrestle Universe are slowly taking over the world, to be honest with you, as far as presenting professional wrestling is concerned.
Yeah, I think you know, it's interesting. I'm almost kind of, I'm shocked by it here, but I'm like, I live in a place where like our 17 year olds don't look like 17 year olds here either. But that's because the food is overpumped with hormones. but this is that is insane.
Yeah, she. I wonder if she'd been the first match we saw her in. The first match we saw her in would be on Glate, because neither of us watch Just Tap Out on a regular basis. Her first Glate match was in 2022. So she would have been 15 years old then. And she was tagging with Miki Iwata from Sendai Girls against Mia Fukuda and Michiko Iugagi. That was a Glate version 4, which we watched. We reviewed that show. And she would have been 15 years old then. And so someone have that presence in this style? Because this style is pretty stiff.
Yeah, you know? Man, God bless her. I hope she has a long career, because she, yeah.
It's like, is it Rio who's like, she's 23 and an 11-year veteran?
Yeah.
Ridiculous number like that. Yeah, Joshi girls do start very, very young in their professional wrestling career.
But imagine if Rio had this size on her, though.
Oh, yeah. It would be an entirely different story. You know, he should be a different kind of wrestler for sure. And clearly, Yuri Suzuki has found her niche in this style of wrestling. She is an excellent shoot style wrestler. She's got all the presence and she knows exactly how to tell a story in this particular format. And this was a banger. Real excitement about this match. For Kyuda showing a lot more presence than she has done in these matches in the past. So it was nice to seeing her kind of like the last time we saw her, really. We haven't seen much of her lately because there hasn't been much UWF action on shows. But it seems to me like the women's matches tend to be wrestling based in the winter and they're more shoot style based in the summer. I don't know why that is. But yes, Fukuda is showing an awful lot of presence in this match. What's your thoughts on it anyway?
No, exactly like you said, it was a bang. This was ace. This was another match I was vocal for. Like I said, Fukuda's my girl that I always root for in these situations because I've got to see her grow so much. And of course, when we first started watching Glee, particularly when we first started watching these UWF matches, she's grown from this very intentional but shy individual with a lot of moxie kind of underneath the surface. I kind of almost had to have it kicked out of her to kind of it being in the forefront now and her kind of going into these matches with a lot more confidence, which is great, which is definitely something you need against Yura. This was just another great example coming off of the first match. Fukuda is another one who was much like Tetsuya, is far more comfortable on her feet than off. And Yura very, very much caught that out the gate and was getting her. And Maya finally kind of caught her and kind of saw that she was probably not going to be as responsive as she probably should have been with the hands, if you will. But then something happened, which I was wondering about. I'm like, I wonder if Yura is going to be like, wait a minute, I could just hoss her. She started to do that. And one of the things that I love about Fukuda is that she's almost even more exciting to watch on the back foot, but she also does this thing where she'll get in the ninth inning of a match and she'll be out on her feet kind of zombying through shots. And it kind of came to that here where it was down to the wire and she was just like, F it, I'm going to just swing because I'm already halfway passed out. And she caught Yura on the jaw and closed it out. This was a nail biter for me. But this was another great example of why these UWF matches are so fun to watch and why Fukuda has been so fun to watch, because she's made herself a comeback kid in a lot of ways.
Yes, absolutely. She does leave it to the last minute, down to one point. On the losing end of things and manages to pull out a victory in this particular close run match. So, yes. Now then, this was a match that kind of, this was a kind of car that kind of celebrated a lot of people and some people we've seen on Glate before. Now, this next match was Dam Tamara of All Japan Pro Wrestling, tag teaming with Sumo Watanabe, going up against Daisuke Nakamura and Teiki Wayada. Watanabe from Glate, obviously Tamura from All Japan. Nakamura and Wada are both freelancers. And this was kind of like a bit of a celebration of indie wrestling in many respects in the shoot format. And this was a thoroughly entertaining back-and-forth tag team match in between the young guys and the veterans. You know, the guys that are breaking through with this style now and the guys who've kind of been doing this style for like 20 years and have become, you know, big names on the indie scene in Japan because of the way that they work these kind of matches. Where, you know, their ability to draw a crowd and their ability to entertain a crowd in this very limited style is a wonderful thing to watch. And it was, these guys were over, especially Nakamura. This was fantastic. Really enjoyed it. What's your thoughts on this match, Marcus?
Absolutely the same. And this was another situation where wasn't expecting a time limit draw because I was so into the match, but when it happened, I just wanted more, much like the first match. This was great. Everybody involved, ace. I want Watanabe to kind of start out more aggressively on the onset because he's another one that kind of, you know, fires back at the wall off the back foot. But I think the MVP for me out this match, the one that kind of stuck out to me the most, was Nakamura. this guy's a problem. This guy's good. And he reminded me of Minoru Tanaka, and I want to see them two face off in a one-on-one.
That would be fantastic.
Which reminds me, you got this wily veteranness about him, and the way he was standing and very much approaching, it's like, you don't got his guard up. He don't need it. He don't need it. Yeah, he's dangerous like that. And to a point, that's kind of, I think, what was throwing Watanabe off. Is like, what is up with this guy? And something to happen, and you'll think you'll have him, and you won't. Like, I think he caught him. Watanabe was like, finally got him with a Dermot. Oh my God, he's not dead. And he caught him with like a rear naked. So yeah, Nakamura is dangerous. But I definitely, like I said, this match was great. They can run this back, but I definitely need to get a one on one with him and Minoru, because they got similar type of approaches to it that I definitely appreciate as a viewer.
The thing is with Nakamura is a bit of an unknown quantity at this level. He wrestled for Noah for the last 4 years, had one match a year for Noah, or three matches in 2021, one match in 22, one match last year. This is his first match from Gleet. Now, that's not saying he hasn't wrestled elsewhere that cage match don't cover. You know, cage match is pretty universal, but there are companies, even tiny companies in Japan, that he may not register with cage match users. So, you know, but it is like, where did this guy come from? He's amazing. And you're absolutely right. I want to see him against Tanaka, because it's just the nice size payoff, the right kind of level of honorary veteranness about it. It would be wonderful to watch, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dan tomorrow looked good here, but again, much like Dan, I'm like, Dan, like, I get it, what you're trying to do, but you're big. Just awesome. Just awesome. You don't need to go on the ground all the time. Just awesome. And you know, so maybe we'll get that more next time. But yeah, this was great.
Yes, it's well, I mean, there is quite the youth revolution going on in which Tomorrow is part of it in All Japan Wrestling, pro wrestling at the moment. So I think it's probably just experience in this kind of match that he lacks, really, because All Japan's always has been. It's the King's Road, isn't it? That's the whole point. Yeah. So, speaking of living legends, Matsukatsu Funaki defeated Yuiska in 46 seconds. Yes, I did say that right. 46 seconds. Blink and you'll miss it. This was the quickest match on the card by a long way. We do believe it was genuine injury, not actual kind of like anything untoward, like superb kind of wrestling technique stuff. Funaki is just phenomenal, and it was a real shame that you didn't get to see more of him. and of course, we do love Yuiska. Absolutely love Yuiska. We've been a big fan of Yuiska for a long time, and he basically got one kick in, and that was it. Which is just really unfortunate, because this match could have been quite something special for an up-and-coming kind of star of this style, going up against the absolute master. It would have been phenomenal, but here we are. What can you do? Just the way things go.
Yeah.
Did you like the ring entrance? Is all I can say.
Love the ring entrance. Love this venue. It was different, but it had its own vibe to it that I definitely appreciated. Again, this is my second time doing this, coming off of the first show we just covered, but the Strongheart show. But these are my notes verbatim. knee meets face. Good night, sweet prince. And this was so quick, it was scary. This is the quickest UWF match I've ever seen. And I think my first time in watching Gleet ever that I saw somebody get stretched out.
Yeah,
so this was scary. And like you said, big fans of you. Wanted to see what he was going to do in this situation. And like you said, it was a shame that I didn't get to see more of Funaki, but I'm almost... mildly glad I didn't, because I don't know how this would have went for you. This was for him to kind of just snap that knee off the way that he did. It's almost like everything just came together for the worst for you, obviously, but for Naki, everything, you know, came for the win. So yeah, but this is also, I guess, another reason why I appreciate the UWF, because this also shows just like the sudden suddenness of these matches and kind of what it can mean. Like you said, all these matches are like 15 minutes or more, but that's being generous because 46 seconds, it might have been less than 46, and they gave him two more seconds. So, yeah, just, you know, God bless you. I hope he's good. And hopefully we get to run this back or we get to see Funaki versus another opponent.
I hope so, too. I mean, you also have to understand, like, as soon as Funaki saw what would happen, he backed off and then told the referee to stop it because he knew he'd hurt Iska. You know, and that only comes with years of experience of these types of matches and years of experience of, like, what's the worst that can possibly happen. So, yes, it was phenomenal to see Funaki in such a wonderful way. However, it's just not much fun as fans for us, and it's obviously definitely not fun for you, Iska, so we hope he's okay. We will hope to see him again back in the wrestling ring soon, and we will have to go back. If you want to see more Funaki in his element, he did have a big run in Noah a couple of years ago, so you can go to Wrestle Universe and catch up his matches on there, and of course go and watch his classic matches from New Japan in the early 2000s, where he was kind of king of the castle. So we shall have to see. I think he was the last person to defend the IWGP World's Heavyweight Championship in a shoot fight because he was in a UWF tournament. And for some reason, Antonio Inoki put the championship on the line in a shoot fight. And it's like, why? But there you go. where are we? Oh, yes. Shenanigans. Now, we don't often get shenanigans in the UWF matches because, you know, it's a very serious thing. But this one did involve Yoshiaki Fujiwara, who is, you know, very old. He's 75. He possibly is older than time. He certainly looks older than time itself. He looks like he's been around since the dawn of the universe, to be honest with you. So things were taken at a bit of a steady pace to allow for this ridiculously hard man, who at one point in this particular match headbutted the turnbuckle, not the pad, the actual metal bit that holds the rope to the ring post, because he has a head that is that hard, and came up smiling. Because he's Yoshiyuki Fujiwara, and he can do what he likes. he was tagging with Kaz Hayashi, who doesn't do this sort of thing normally, but hey, he's having his retirement run, and he doesn't care. He wanted to be involved in the fun. And they were going up against Fujiwara's most notable offspring, in a wrestling point of view, not actually his children, Minoru Suzuki and Kendo Kishin. Now, Kendo Kishin has a reputation for being a bit of a dick, and the match started with Suzuki going, right, you aren't going to actually muck about this time, are you? We're going to do it properly. Which you say, oh, yeah, no worries, no, it's no problem. And then, of course, started mucking with Minoru Suzuki because he's one of the few people on the planet who probably would stand Lance lasting longer than 13 seconds with Minoru Suzuki. And then after that, things settled down, and away we went. And it was big, dumb wrestling, but in a shoot-style way, and it kind of showcased what everybody was in for in this particular match. What's your thoughts on this one, Marcus? Because obviously it's the first time meeting Mr. Fujiwara, and probably Mr. Kishin as well, but it was kind of a bit of a light relief match to get you to the main event. What did you think?
Yeah, this was a good. I'm not gonna call it a buffer because I would never disrespect Minoru Suzuki like that. But yeah, this was definitely my introduction to Kendo and Fujiwara. And better, you know, I guess Kendo thought better because he was, you know, kind of allowed himself to kind of allow Minoru to take the lead, rightfully so. Because you can't out asshole murder granddad. You're not gonna do it. You can't do it. It's going to be the definition of a long night. But yeah, this was cool. Like, I just watching Mr. Fujiwara, this is the first time respectfully that I've seen it. I think since I've been watching Japanese wrestling of any kind, that I've seen an active wrestler. Because we, you know, always watch these elder statesmen in the sport, particularly in Japan. But this is the first time I've seen like the actual wrestler actually wearing their age.
Yes. That's a really interesting way of putting it. Yeah.
Yeah. So this was it was interesting from that point, because even on his entrance, I could say like, oh, he's really an older guy. That being said, This is also the first time I've seen, you know, Minoru was kind of square off with somebody where it's like, you know what? Not dealing with you. I'm just not in the mood. You go over there and do whatever you want to do with your headbutts. To the point where things will be happening during the match and he'll be trying to do something with Minoru. Minoru just like, no, you stay there. I'm gonna go kill your partner. But yeah, I just normally we don't take shots at those guys, but I gotta say this, like Hanma, you've been on some BS for a while. Cause your headbutts are nothing compared to this. Like, what are you doing? Like the man went and headbutted the literal turnbuckle bar. Like, it's not, yeah, it's just a different class of guy. But yeah, like you said, these were different kind of hijinks for a UWF match, but it still had at least serious moments in it. And yeah, I think was it Kendo that closed it out with the submission?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. So that worked there. But you know, I think ultimately all this match was high respect, a continued road as you know, Kaz Hayashi closes out a great career. But I think everything was kind of geared towards respecting, even in the loss, respecting the real OG and Yoshiaki. So I don't know how much more we're gonna see of him. But this was a great outing for that. You know, the fact that he's still going, what he's doing at his age is great.
I'm watching again now, and it's just like, you watch, he calls up a Kaz Hayashi for the first tag, and he just has such a smile on his face. He's getting in the ring with Minoru Suzuki. No one has a smile on the face that they're getting in the ring with Minoru Suzuki. No one. Ever. You know, you're coming for an ass whooping. You're either angry at him or you're scared of him. There are no emotions in between. It's one or the other. And Yoshiaki Fujiwara just goes, hey, it's you. Let's have another go. Let's keep telling this story. We've been telling this story since I met you in 1988, and we're going to do it again. And it's only going to be a bit of fun, and it's only going to be two friends and my protege having a fun match with me. But hey, we're still telling this story 46 years later. That's a story to tell, isn't it? That's the ultimate wrestling story. And it's a guy who was trained by Carl Gotch and Billy Robinson and the Snake Pit lineage of these two. And, you know, this is pro wrestling at its most base. This story is 46 years old, and it goes back to the birth of the Snake Pit in Wigan in the 1930s. And this is wrestling. This is all the wrestling you'll ever need. And that's why I love UWF, because it's not because it's World of Sports style. It's not. But it is a style of wrestling you just do not see anywhere else at this level with this kind of level of wrestler in it. And the fact Minoru Suzuki comes and does it, you know, it's a wonderful thing. Now, there is a good chance he was doing it as a favor so he could get Fukuda for Bloodsport. Because, you know, Minoru Suzuki's a businessman as well. But this was fun. This just absolute blast, an absolute wonderful story. If you don't mind, I will send you some Yoshiaki Fujiwara from the 90s when he was absolutely on the top of his game, if that's all right with you, so you can see him in his prime, sir.
No, please do.
I will do. Let us get on, though, to the main event of the evening, which was a bit of serious business. Hikaru Saito, former member of the Pancras Dojo, professional wrestler extraordinaire, going up against our very own UWF, former UWF heavyweight champion Takanori Ito, in a bit of a dream match for Shoot Style fans. Saito has had a hell of a year. Still announces himself in Pancras Mission, though most of his time these days is spent in All Japan Pro Wrestling. This time last year, he was one of the picks from Takahashi made to join the Festival of Junior Heavyweights. He had a hell of a run as All Japan Junior Heavyweight Champion, and really made himself in GLATE. This match features the leader of Yan's family losing the shenanigans, because this is his serious side, with Minoru Tanaka as his corner man, going up in a Shoot Style fight against one of the world's best Shoot Style wrestlers. But arguably, Ito these days is one of the world's best Shoot Style wrestlers as well. And this was proper wrestling, big lads wrestling. What do you think of this, Marcus?
Yeah, they could definitely run this back. This was great. Great to close out the show. And it's funny because you're talking about anytime they do the title calls for the names when a guy enters the ring, and under that name. Anytime I see watching UWF and they say Pancrase, I'm like, oh, this guy's nothing to play with. Anytime I see him, like, I don't know this guy, but I know he is not to be played with. And every time I'm right. Yeah, and I, you know, I've been calling for Ito to kind of step it up a little bit and get more aggressive in these situations here. And he really didn't have a choice here because it was, he found himself in a Fukuda situation where it was, you know, the last inning. He had to put down. And because Saito was very much catching him off his feet in those submissions. And I think he might have dropped him once. But yeah. You know, Takanori, again, I'm like, when he could just kick into that gear and get a hold of his opponents and then just go for those germs and close them out the way that he needs to, he'll win pretty much all the matches he'll have on the UWF. And here, he kind of, like I said, it was the ninth inning. He had to close it out, and he did it. Oftentimes, these things kind of close out with a time limit draw submission. This is first time in a second. Obviously, we had that flash knockout, what I'm going to call what happened to you. But like a real stoppage when he caught him, I think, with another German, and he got on top of him and just went palm hammer fist on him. I'm like, okay, this is the aggression I've been kind of looking for. And he got it done. But this was a great match. Could have went either way. And definitely look forward to seeing more of Saito. But this was cool to see Ito get the win. And maybe, you know, a look into the future of him potentially becoming champion again, or at last. Yeah.
It depends on, yes, I suppose it really depends on the situation with Junior Hayato. We haven't heard an awful lot for him recently, as you can probably imagine, because he's going through some pretty serious health issues, and we hope he's okay. But if that match does come across, again, depending on Junior Hayato's health, and obviously, we absolutely hope that will happen. That's going to be an absolute blinding match to see at that level. But we will see. This is the trouble with, unfortunately, Junior Hayato's situation. For those of you know, he has spinal cancer. He has come back. And essentially, he decided a few years ago when he was first diagnosed with cancer to have his tumor reduced only by 25% so he could continue wrestling because he loved professional wrestling so much. And now it comes back. He obviously have to reduce that tumor again. And it's spinal cancer. It's playing with some dangerous stuff. So that requires a lot of treatment and a lot of surgery. And we can only see how those things will go. And hopefully things will be okay. But Junior Hayato is a world-class professional wrestler. And especially this style of wrestling, arguably the best in the world. And we really want to see him back in the ring again, especially against Takanori Ito. Because the last time these two wrestle was absolutely astoundingly good. So,
yeah,
we shall see.
This was good, but this is probably one of my favorite calls from Bleed this year, and definitely one of my favorite UWF calls. So yeah,
it's actually I think they've got the formula just right. You know, it's a little bit of fluff to just kind of break things up a little bit, but everything was serious. Everything was really well put together. The matchmaking was good quality. Because, you know, as we've said before, styles make fights. And, like, Ito's a big guy. Saito's a small guy. Saito tends to rely on submissions. Ito's kind of more of a power guy. There was a nice kind of, like, balance between those two styles, which is really what you're after. You know, like, Fukuda and Suzuki. Suzuki's a power woman. Fukuda's a striker. You know, there's a nice balance between what they're trying to make with these fights. So it's been interesting to watch. So, yeah, it was cool to watch this card. And I think it was a nice balance as well to, like, the unseriousness in the nicest, most respectful way, the unseriousness of the Strong Hearts card, which was a lot of fun for everybody involved. And this was taking that story a little bit further. Right then. Well, that pretty much covers us for GLATE version 4. Anything you would like to ask, or LIDET UWF version 4, anything you'd like to ask, add to Marcus?
Oh, no, I'm looking forward to the next show. I always appreciate the fact that they dedicate whole shows to their factions, which is cool. And Yeah, I know, you know, they got some banger stuff coming up, which we, of course, will cover. So just looking forward to more.
Yes. The latest announcement was the show from Soft Ground Wrestling in Africa that Chek Shimatani and Seema went to. Chek Shimatani's efforts will be coming out this week on YouTube, so we'll probably look at them next time. Oh, they have been... There's two cards for them to do. Has it been? Has it opened yet? I saw it on it earlier. Premieres in 3 days. So maybe we can look at it in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, yeah. We be on X and watching all this horrendous BS tribalism from you know, the IWC, and then stuff like Soft Ground Wrestling, you know, has this meteoric rise, and it's just great to see that people are not only chipping in monetarily in the industry, but showing up in person, you know, to lend their skills and notoriety. So it's that's been a real you know, wholesome, you know, revelation within the larger zeitgeist of wrestling. So
we have a big announcement for the June the 9th show. Mansoor and Manson Madden will make their late debut. Manson D. Madden Blair, that's they're coming on the June the 9th show. There's a house show coming up on May 4th, the Saturday the 4th, which obviously we won't cover because they don't put those on YouTube. We think we may have named them. possibly. 17th of June is... Oh, we've done these. I'm looking at the calendar. So the next week, obviously, we'll look here. So we've done House of the 4th of our show. There's another show on the 19th of the 5th. Glate version 11, the next big show, will be on the 26th of May. 6th of June, it's Glate versus DDT. A Glate version X on the 9th of June. 23rd of June will be another show. And then Tokyo Dome City Hall on the 1st of July. And then Glate version Mega in Osaka on the 10th of June. That's a bit of an odd order. Or is that the 6th of October? It's the 6th of October. They're going quite far in advance. Anywho, for today, I'd like to thank my co-host, Mr. Marcus Green. Thank you for your time, sir. Where can we find you on the internets?
Always a pleasure. Glad we was able to do it. You can find me on X, the cesspool that it is. Paradox Kid, PARADOXKID. All the good people that's left, hit me up.
Elon did a poll. Well, he didn't do a poll, but he asked, who actually still calls it Twitter anymore? And every response was, I still call it Twitter. No one calls it X. Why did you bother changing it? An absolute waste of time and money. But there you go. you can find me at Sheriff Lone Star and Sheriff Lone Star TX on Instagram. Also Sheriff Lone Star on Mastodon. You can find the show Troopini Show on Twitter and on Instagram. And you can find it as the Troopini Show on Facebook and on YouTube. We're YouTube on... Hang on, with Troopini Show, the Troopini Show on YouTube as well. And on Patreon, we keep the Troopini Show free forever for everyone. Thank you very much for listening to us today. We will be back next week. Not really sure. We kind of booked in advance. I think me and Christy are doing a New Japan show next week. I'm kind of lost in the whole ether of professional wrestling right now. There's just that much of it. I have to watch that much to keep up that it's just kind of washing over me.
Yeah, but, you got to watch the usual product, then people are trying to carry over kayfabe on the sports stuff. Jesus Christ.
Yes, for those of you who are blissfully unaware of Mr. Tony Khan, Mr. Anthony Khan and his hijinks and shenanigans, he had his neck broken, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, on AEW television this week and appeared wearing a neck brace. For a press conference, which was just brilliant. What wasn't so brilliant was comparing, like, you know, Vince McMahon to WWE to Harvey Weinstein. Like, Vince McMahon, yes, but you can't have Ric Flair on your roster and then complain about sex pests, can you? Really? Let's be honest. So, you know.
Their sex pests have energy drinks, so, you know.
Just because you've got an endorsement deal doesn't mean you are any less of a sex pest. But yes, so you go for it, Tony son. I applaud your just massive attention to detail. Let's just go with that. It's a hoot. He's going for it. Can't blame him. Fair enough. I mean, one of the group of we have a group of podcasts. We all promote each other. Nick DiTullio did point out, said, I thought Tony Khan wasn't going to appear in any angles on AEW television. Make it make sense. And Tamura's right to him, you're telling me a wrestling promoter has been dishonest? For shame. How did this happen? They are so normally such stand-up citizens who would never tell a lie about anything. Anywho. But there you go. What can you do? But yeah. We'll be back next week. And we'll talk about some wrestling from somewhere in the world. At some point. Take care. And we'll speak to you soon. Bye.